This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation.
The Wuhan coronavirus is a double whammy, affecting both the nation's healthcare system and the economy. Here to discuss the impact of both is Robert Grabois. He is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. Bob, before we talk about the economic effects of this whole coronavirus situation, let's talk about the American healthcare industry. As we head into what will hopefully be the peak of this and then get beyond it, the American healthcare system, how prepared was it for a situation just like this?
I think we're probably better prepared than most countries. We're seeing now the frailties of some of the European systems. We spend an awful lot on healthcare in this country, but part of that is because we're wealthy and we're really demanding people, and that's a good thing. And we don't want to wait for surgery 6 to 8 months, 10 months the way that a lot of Europeans are willing to put up with. So we build in a lot of excess capacity, slack resources that in a time of crisis, it's nice to have them. So we're much better situated on the number of ICU beds than a lot of European countries. That said, we don't know how far and how fast this thing is going to go. We do have our capacity limits. They are not infinite. They are not even, they're a couple of times better than Europe, but if we get overwhelmed, you can end up in a battlefield triage situation. We are beginning, and I'm actually somewhat heartened by some of the discussion. We've talked before. I spend most of my time saying we need to speed up the FDA. We need to get them off their haunches and approve things faster. And the states need to allow more telemedicine and more scope of practice, let nurse practitioners do things. And all of a sudden, you're seeing the federal government, the president, Congress, state legislatures, governors, private institutions saying, you know what, we're just going to chuck all these things, these regs over the rail. We need to get this done fast. So you've got laboratories, universities who said, okay, we're going to kind of skip all those rules that we usually follow, and we're going to move through. So I think we're actually getting an interesting experiment to demonstrate that, no, you really need to be prepared to move faster. So I'm kind of hopeful that that'll be the silver lining that comes out of this thing.
In terms of our supply lines, Bob, there has been a lot made that many of the medications, the drugs that we depend on in this country are made in China. And also, we have a concern at the moment over equipment supply lines, things like respirators. What are your thoughts on that? Is this a case of where another lesson learned is we've got to ramp up manufacturing here in the USA?
Well, I think part of it is that we need to ramp up our flexibility. So we're seeing interesting cases. I saw it in Italy. I've seen it elsewhere where, okay, we don't have any ventilators. You know what? We're going to roll a 3D printer into the hospital, and we're going to start printing our own ones. So you have alternative methods. It's fascinating to me the speed of this thing. So 4 weeks ago, I was at a conference on infectious disease that had been planned for a year. And in the opening statement, someone said, it's interesting that, you know, we've got a, over in China, they've got something like this, kind of makes our topic a little more relevant. A week later, I stayed with a friend who is a sort of senior international business consultant in supply chain management. We talked about his work. I don't remember this even coming up in the conversation. So in a span of about 3 weeks, all of a sudden, from what I understand, that's all he's hearing now. He's working night and day on these things. It's so fast, so soon, I don't know how it's going to shake out in the end, but we're going to rethink everything. I think that is the only thing you can predict, is that we're going to have a whole lot of rethinking how we do the world economy, how we think about it. And then we're going to have, I'm hoping, we'll rethink more about telehealth. We need to think more about getting rid of state boundaries for teledocs. So a doctor in New York can lend assistance in Washington State when all those doctors are at their wits' end trying to deal with this crisis. And now all of a sudden the president's saying, you know what, we need to allow doctors to practice medicine across borders on this. We need to loosen up licensing requirements so you can ship them in from other states. And so I think the things that I generally talk about, all of a sudden, there are a lot of people coming to the realization that, yes, we really need to think about this stuff, that we are binding ourselves. It's bad but tolerable during normal times, but in a time like this, we are really seeing just how disastrous these things can be.
As we look then, hopefully, to being more nimble, to having more flexibility after this whole crisis ebbs, let's also talk about what happens to the U.S. economy. The president has himself started using the R word, the recession word. Is this a case, Bob, of where you think the economy is going to be able to bounce back quickly because of pent-up demand? Or is this going to be a long slog, maybe not as long as we had coming out of the Great Recession, but not an immediate bounce back either?
Okay, and I'll have to put on my hat. I used to, before I did healthcare economics, I did macroeconomics and monetary and international trade and finance. So I'm pulling a little bit of that knowledge base back out. This thing is unprecedented. I don't know of anything like it where masses of the economy are shut down and normal human interactions are just closed. And there will be businesses that certainly that never recover from this, restaurants that go under, companies, businesses that have narrow profit margins to begin with, and to go a month, 2 months, 3 months essentially without revenue will be the end of them. World War II was certainly a massive redirection of industry, but in some sense, not even quite to this scale. The sort of, again, the shutting down of normal human interaction. I'm hard-pressed to think of any precedent in American history. If you look at the closest, it's probably the 1918-1920 Spanish flu episode, which the world did fall into, both because of the war and the Spanish flu. Total output in the world just plunged, although it bounced back rather quickly. People forget that when Warren Harding became president in 1921, the U.S. economy was in dire straits. I think you could say it was comparable, and I haven't looked at the numbers in a while, but it might have even been worse than, say, where the economy was when Barack Obama became president. The collapse of the markets in September before that election. Unlike that time, the Great Recession, 1921, President Harding laid down some pretty simple rules of what they were and were not going to do. And it was before we really got too interventionist. The economy within 6 months had just exploded. We had the Roaring Twenties. And part of it may simply have been we allowed the economy to fix itself. We allowed the, we didn't stop all the spontaneity, all of the innovation that people are suddenly saying, let's chuck the regulations and develop some vaccines and let doctors practice closed borders. That sort of thing was sort of the norm that was laid down in 1921. And this is how you're going to do, go to it. And they did. So I think part of it is going to depend on when the crisis passes, do we go back to the way things were done and bind ourselves up again, or do we really say we've learned some lessons, we really need to let markets do their functioning? You can find a certain parallel from about 20, 25 years ago when at the big onset of the AIDS crisis, the FDA was using their usual procedures, and it was going to take forever, years, to get new drugs to AIDS sufferers, who said, we're not going to wait that long. We're not going to wait 15 years until you do all your tests. You need to start pumping this thing out and allowing us to get ourselves up, sort of bypass some of the red tape. And one of my former colleagues worked at the FDA at the time. He said it was actually pretty scary. You had huge crowds ringing the agency, and if you walked your way into the building, you were going to walk through an angry and desperate mob. Well, they got their way. The FDA said, you know what? We really don't have 15 years to play with this, so we're going to speed up things. And they sped it up. They got the drugs out. They more or less, they ended the critical phase of the AIDS crisis. And then he said, and after that, we kind of went back to where we were. We kind of went, okay, that's gone, so let's go back and be slow again. So I'm hopeful that we'll learn some lessons and stick to them. history suggests we may not be all that good at doing so, that we tend to slip back into the comfortable old shoes once the crisis passes. We'll see. I mean, you can see things, parallels in the space program. When the Cold War was an existential threat to the United States, we said, you know, let's go to the moon 8 years from now. And we did it. And after that, it was, let's sort of putter around in Earth orbit for the next 40 years. You know, actually, we're kind of in an exciting period for space science now, and the big question is, how do you get to those moments where people are willing to let markets function and do interesting things? So I'm hopeful of it. I won't predict it because we've never been here before.
We have been talking with Robert Graybois, who is a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.